Dieter and Hutch Tuesday. Short week. Thursday Night Football coming up fast and furious. We'll talk about what we see on the Rams film on Wednesday's stream. Also have a video with the great Cam DeSilva of the Rams Wire coming out. First Dieter's Football Friends video. But we gotta get to the bottom of what the hell we saw on Sunday, Jake. We were there. We saw it in person. We didn't like what we saw. They slopped it up, baby. No. They got some water on them steaks. And, man, I mean, it didn't look much better. In fact, I think it looked much worse when you watch back the tape.
It's something where, like, the adage, I believe, when you talk to O-line coaches and O-linemen, where it's like, if it looked bad, it's not actually as bad as you thought. When you go back and watch it, if it looked good, it's probably not as good as you thought. This was a rare case where it was maybe worse than I had anticipated, because I sort of went into it being like, all right, well, it was bad, but usually it's not that bad. Clearly, just the worst offensive line grades I've given this season, which I'll, again, put out tomorrow on the Hutch Report, and it's Connor Colby got his world rocked.
Welcome to the NFL. I mean,
he was dreadful. And for the talk of like Trent being bad, and he wasn't the worst on the line by any stretch. Colton McKivitz was like the only solid to good piece. And it's a pretty low bar that he had to clear. So I think I want to talk about the running game first, because it goes where people go like, oh, line. Someone's like, you can't run behind Trent, which is not true. That's the one thing.
That's
Trent
the going one forward, thing you should do.
Trent going forward is still great. And honestly, if you put Colby in space, for the most part, it's still really good. But I think there is a demand for precision. And we've talked about this with Kyle Shanahan's run game, where you don't have George Kittle. You have Kendrick Bourne, who I tweeted out. I think the drops were terrible. The blocking might be worse. Yeah. So you've got like people either not knowing their assignment or getting the assignment wrong on the edge. So you get like just linebackers and safeties can flow freely into a gap and cut things off. So McCaffrey's not trusting anything. No. He doesn't quite have the burst. And like there was one example where he just like didn't read it right. Like he should have cut left. And part of it was like someone getting beat because Brendel didn't hand off a block right to Connor Colby. And so he like, I think, kind of panicked and went right. And there's a whole, it's all bad. It's like a really dysfunctional run game. And the pass game's like moving the ball, but it's bad too.
Yes. We'll get to the pass game. The pass game, it's obviously bad. The drops are not good. We'll get to it in a second.
Yeah.
We know that they're a well-coached operation. We've seen this offensive line as a sum-of-its-parts unit with Trent Williams or even Joe Staley in the past, but just kind of randos everywhere else. Right. Not just be a good offensive line in the run game, but a great offensive line in the run game. So it's not as if Chris Forrester forgot how to scheme up a run game. How much of this do you attribute to the fact that your left tackle's injured, your left guard's injured, your center is not physically domineering, let's put it that way.
Never has been,
never will be. You have a right guard who is just, I mean,
he's hurting,
gritting through it.
He's fighting through it, but sometimes it's just, and I thought Pooney would be the worst on the line, and he wasn't. I mean, he was bad, but
he
like,
fought it. He fought
surviving out there.
I mean, it really should be highlighted, and I know it's the NFL, and I know everyone gets injured, that everyone but the center is on the injury report.
Is McKivitz already on there?
Yeah, McKivitz has a calf thing. We all? But he was on the injury report on Monday. Now it said that he did a full practice the day they didn't practice. But like, yeah, he's on there.
Man.
As is everyone else. I think they threw me on there just for good measure.
You will play a game this season. you're gonna be in the press box and they're like, Dieter, get out there.
Did you bring your pads? No, I didn't bring my pads. I haven't had pads in 17 years. And you
say you're Charlie Heck, who is a practice squad guy, who's the starting right tackle for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Things are going great on offensive lines across the nation.
See them in 2 weeks.
We're going to Chad Powers my way onto the line. It's like, no. I am the guy that you just signed. Paycheck's got to beat this one. regardless, you can become a member of Dieter and Hutch and change that right here, right now. For only a couple cents a day, you can feed podcasters, who probably one of which doesn't need to be fed anymore. Regardless, how much of this do you attribute to the fact that these boys be hurting?
Injuries is, it's substantial. It's Pooney, because Pooney, it's like Pooney was not the fleetest of foot on tape, but like had a good like sort of lateral ability. Like he could get out and move, like move better than his size would suggest. He's clearly limited in that respect and just doesn't bounce back from any little knock as quickly. Can't displace people, which his strength was a huge part of that.
Totally.
Colby's looking like a guy who is a seventh round rookie right now, who flashed and then went, groin injury's not helping, but how much of this is the guy that we really hated coming out of Iowa? And what is he as a player? I think his athletic ability gives him actually a pretty high ceiling, but there's a lot that's like inconsistent with him. Trent, his issue, I think, is less in the run game. Like in the run game, I still see him pretty much dominating. There's a couple times he gets beat, which is rare. But yeah, for him, it's like the anchor. And we'll get to the pass game. But I think the injuries there are a part of it. You're not getting a lot of displacement. Lanes are tight as is. And when the O-line's okay, it's someone else. So you've got like, you've got a lot of different blocks coming across.
Can we put a pin in that for a second?
Yep.
I need to throw a stat your way, which I think is going to encapsulate everything you're about to say and everything we've been talking about. The 49ers run the second highest rate of 21 personnel in the NFL. They're the fourth worst team on EPA per play in 21 personnel this year. You can't live like this.
That checks out.
I mean, yeah, we all see that. But for the fact that they can't run it out of 21, there's no solution there other than fundamentally changing what it is you think your run game is, because and this is where I think you were going. Juszczyk, Farrell, Tonjes, they ain't helping.
It's one of them will nail their block of play. The other one or other two are almost guaranteed to mess up. They're doing, you know, slice blocks where it's just like full speed. It's for split zone. Like you come across and you're just going full speed and trying to block somebody. Sometimes it works. Sometimes you're completely failing. The amount of unblocked guy, like strong side or weak side defensive ends that are just able to like be unabated to Christian McCaffrey is outrageous. And then you look on the end and you're asking for some really tough assignments where you're asking basically reach blocks from your wide receivers, where you want Kendrick Bourne to like run 5 yards and then cut somebody off. And he's not even getting the guy when he's right in front of him. Like Bourne's been really bad. Jennings being hurt really doesn't help. I think Robinson can actually block like a maniac for you.
DeMarcus
Robinson. DeMarcus Robinson. I liked what he had to offer as a blocker. Pearsall already like a mediocre blocker and just doesn't really want to get that involved. He can be okay, but like the knee injury, he's like, I don't need to get, and realistically, like he's not involved in most of like the run calls as a key block.
No, he's out there at X. I mean, he's on a super stretch play, which they just haven't been able to run this year. But I do think he should probably be in the cards for this week. Now you're putting him in there, but I don't think it's going to be an issue for Pearsall this week, because I don't think Pearsall's playing on Thursday. It's just an awful offensive line to watch. And it's not like there's a lot of offensive lines that kind of bend but don't break, right?
Yeah.
And if you were to just sort of drop in for a game, you'd be like, these guys aren't very good. This is a different kettle of fish. This is, oh my God, that guy's on his back and people are stepping on him. That it is like trampled in a crowd energy sometimes with this
offensive line. This is like, and the benefit of the doubt is that this offensive line in this run game, in my view, tends to take till the second half of the year to really get rolling, where there's a lot of timing, a lot of precision, a lot of this guy makes this block, passes it off. And then just offensive lines in general take time to get going, right? My concern is like every single play, somebody's fucking up pretty bad. And again, it's not always the offensive line. It's not always like Luke Farrell. And sometimes Luke Farrell's like looking for his guy and he's like, wait, that is my guy. Why is Kendrick Bourne taking him and completely lost on his assignment? So you get two guys blocking one, and then there's like two free rushers who are murdering Christian McCaffrey in the backfield. And you're like, there's coaches will talk about it, just a pure lack of execution.
Yeah.
And we talked about it last year. There's a lot of that too. It's
made still a lot more sense last year when you were finding randos on the street.
Correct.
Like, correct. This is your starting offensive line with a rookie that you drafted, which is a rarity for the 49ers on an offensive line. This is with Trent Williams and Colton McKivitz. This is with, I mean, what's Trent making? 30? This is with $45 yep. million dollars worth of tackles. This is with, you know, Pooney, who was one of the best rookie performers in the NFL last year, even if his play did slip late. This is with your hand-picked center that you have been adamant cannot be replaced under any circumstances. And no, it's fine. The Colby aspect of things, like, he had a great game against New Orleans. He looked like a different person. Yep. But as you said, he's a seventh-round rookie. The book's going to get out just like it did with Pooney last year. Pooney responded. Pooney wasn't yep. as good, but he was still good. Now, a groin injury for an offensive lineman sounds like a very good reason to not play. Frankly, if I had a groin injury, I wouldn't leave the bed. So a credit to these guys for gutting it out. But doesn't it say something about the state? They had 10 guys that they brought through on cut day. They had 10 guys. They couldn't cut anybody because they didn't want to risk anyone to the practice squad because they're just too good. They're too good. We can't risk them to the practice squad. But they can't replace any of your injured players on the offensive line to maybe get a little something.
Yeah.
What?
I know. And there's like the amount of, because when you're trying to get these explosive runs, it's so reliant on double team at the point of attack and quickly passing it off. And they're doing it. They're not getting, like, the running back doesn't have a chance to get vertical. He doesn't have enough space to get going vertical. And so what happens is you pass it off, but then he's waiting. There's nowhere to go and no one's really displacing anyone. And then, okay, the three technique just like tears off of Pooney or Colby, who were like fighting for their lives and are expecting the play to already be past them.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I don't know if it was the first or the second run play of the game against the Jaguars, but it was, sorry, Todd, you got to go. Sorry, buddy. What are we talking about? I don't know if it was the first or the second play of the game against the Jags, but when Jordan Lewis, a nickelback, lines up at Sam.
I think it was the first play.
Yeah. And legitimately, to his credit, made a great play. Okay. Yeah. But as he's able to knife in on a duo counter, like, that's awful. The whole point of that play is that you've created enough mess and yet you're in such a position that even if you don't get hands on him, he's not in a position to make a play. And in fact, he's the one making the play. Did Devin Lloyd get touched on Sunday? I mean, that must have been the greatest day of his life. He had two interceptions and I don't think he had a grass stain on his jersey because no one could get to the second level. That doesn't say to me that they suck. That tells me that they're injured.
Yeah. There are times that they can get to the second level, but it feels like a lot of these assignments on these plays, teams are out scheming the 49ers run game and they're setting up in a way where like it's really hard for these guys to get to their marks, especially on the perimeter.
Yes.
And they just are all hurt, right? And it's early in the year, so like those little details where you're like relying on Kendrick Bourne, who like has been hurt badly in like, what is it, two straight years, is coming in, doesn't actually remember the playbook, sort of probably was like, oh, I know this, and then is like, oh no, wait,
put a pin in that with Bourne in the playbook. You mentioned the perimeter aspect of things. We saw that against the Saints, right? The big play that could have been, oh, we're about to break one. It's just that two guys don't block, which is kind of, you know, fundamental. We're about to break through as a million-dollar podcast. We just don't even have 3,000 subscribers yet.
Right.
And by the way, you can fix that. Again, I'm pandering now. Regardless, panhandling? I think it's more panhandling.
Panhandling.
So this was supposed to be the game where they showed that, okay, it's not just a scheme thing, right? Okay, you everything was being forced to the outside against tight fronts, effectively 3-4 defenses, wide line. Okay, that's the ball game that's going to take away outside zone, but it should allow inside zone. And to a degree, it did. I do think that the Niners were can't divide by zero, but a much better inside zone team in the first couple weeks. This was the game where you should be able to run outside zone, because the Jaguars are just like, here's four, here's two, here's five, do what you will. And they can't get to the second, they can't execute these blocks. When you're dealing with the Saints, the Seahawks, the Cardinals, you're right. They were out scheming the 49ers, not just on the basics of how they lined up, but also in their late rotations and how they moved their linebackers around. And it created real issues when we're talking about where to hand off, who to hand off to, just how you control your gaps, because there is so much communication, which, for the record, is the reason why they keep Brendel in there, because they think that Brendel is the only one and the only one that they trust, frankly, at this point, to handle that aspect, which is vital, fundamental to them running the football. I would say that this has not been an encouraging season for him in that regard. Regardless, it has been a real challenge. But when you face the Jaguars and you don't get those issues forced upon you and you still can't run the ball, now we're talking about something more insidious and foundational to this run game. This had to have been the game. Everything lined up for them to do it. And it was arguably their worst one in running the football.
It's and I might have to just like start also charting what scheme they're running with the run game, because I would like to have that in the Rolodex, like, to just know
IZ, OZ, or maybe even just, you know, if you want to really,
and like what's actually not working. And maybe with the extra days we have after the Rams game, I might go and do that at the start of next week. But you can talk about a lot of things. They also just like physically, like, you know, as much as we talk about the scheme not working, like physically at the point of attack, they're getting rocked.
Yes. And very difficult to get to the second level when the first level has you on your ass.
Yeah. And there was an element of that on both sides of the ball. Not to say that Jaguars offense like dominated them, but there were a couple times that they got them. And second level too, when you're talking about the 49ers defense, I rewatched that ETN play, and you watch like Winters dive in too quickly the wrong way, and then the Pinnick thing and Seagulls get moved. There's just like winning and the 49ers mentality and the way it's like Sal approaches, it's all predicated on like a base level of physicality that should permeate throughout the team. And if you're not going to like execute the assignments to a T, you should at least be more physical, or at least try to be. And I just
that's the Buffalo Bills model. The Buffalo Bills model on the offensive line is like, we're not that good at this, but we're just going to beat the shit out of you. And like most teams, and especially defensive lines in this day and age where there's only, you know, a couple true power forwards, right? And there's a lot of slender gentlemen playing defensive line these days, and Mykel Williams could be a reasonable three tech. Like, having maulers, like, you can get away with it. And there's a couple of teams that have just said, we're just going to maul. I think Green Bay is like that. We're just going to maul. They don't maul. They don't maul at all. They're supposed to be the clean operators.
Sorry. I would like to show. I don't know how you remove this bar in the middle. You're in charge of directing. I would like to pull up the week four run grades. Maybe do it this way. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, that's better.
There we go. So again,
that's not good, Jake. Not good. You see a lot of red. Is that good?
Again, there's so much more that, again, on Wednesday, I'll show you like single, you know, pass game, how many snaps are actually with help and all that stuff. But I just wanted to show you, like, just to have a visual representation of how the run game went. Not good.
Not good.
Colby was just getting absolutely murked. And there's so many times, too, where, you know, Brendel played poorly, too. But it's like there's times where Brendel looks worse because he's like trying to pass something off and either Pooney or Colby can't take on the guy he's trying to pass off. Like they're just not able to get the guy one-on-one. And so somebody's stuck on a double team for too long. And by that time, it's
it takes the double team to block a guy because these are half versions of the players that they were. I mean, it's quite as simple as that. And I think every team is going to take advantage. I mentioned to you on the Sunday show, is this the new man press man to man? Are you coming around on it? Are you feeling what I'm feeling?
Like, it's such a different issue, but if the thesis is that it's like the thing that's damning them week in and week out from an offensive perspective, I'm getting there. I think it's something that just like, I don't know how you solve this, right? When it's just injury related part of it. And then part of its scheme and part of it's just personnel. It's going to be exhausting for them because the bye doesn't come until week 14. I think if they could, they would simulate this game, and I don't think they would ever forfeit a game, but I think if they could without the shame of it, it would be pretty nice for them to forfeit this game. Cause I think they're going to lose, and we'll preview it tomorrow. But I think the physical toll of trying to get these guys out here, and it's like everyone talks about their injuries, and fans, I think, overblow the injuries. But like, the worst possible time that they could be having a short week game. Their bodies are crumbling.
The bodies are crumbling, and here comes Braden Fisk, Puna Ford, Kobe Turner, Byron Young, and Jared Verse in a five-man front. That sounds like it's going to go great because these guys couldn't handle the Jags, who are fine. I'm not even saying the Jags were bad on the I like the defensive line for the Jags.
The Jags' defense is actually pretty nice. I like what Campanile's doing over there.
I agree, but they're fine. Like we're not talking about
right. It's not an elite unit. It's like an above average solid unit.
Like legitimately, Alec. This is very important stuff that we need to do right here. Is that a Stanley Cup? It is a Yeti Cup. My wife got me a Yeti Cup for my birthday.
It's a great mug. When I house sat for Dieter, I used that mug.
Yeah. And I got my little Mizzou Tiger sticker. I like it. I dig it. And it is not a Coke Zero. It's a Diet Coke. I got about 3 hours of sleep last night. So we're rocking. I'm like Steph at the podium yesterday at Warriors Media Day. I'm antsy. Got a little pre-workout.
Was he antsy?
Well, he really does not like Jonathan Kuminga's agent. And that's a different stream for a different time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we asked him and he's like, I don't listen to it. Steph's over it. Let's put it that way.
I think we're all over it. Griffin asking in the good questions. Yep. What's up with the NFC West having two division games on Thursday night, back-to-back weeks?
That's kind of how they go about it. I mean, they try to make them division games for the ease of travel. And I think that's kind of how they want to structure it. I think they want it to be division games. They want to have the rivalry uniforms. We're going back to Color Rush. We're going back to Color Rush, folks.
Yeah, there's an element of this that's like the scheduling that's a little bit like rooting the competitive integrity of the league in terms of like putting like key games on short weeks and shitty nights. And you're like, well, shouldn't the division games like have the most rest so that you get the most like actual competition where guys aren't coming off short weeks? Anyway,
I would argue that there is just devil's advocate here. Those are the games that you need the least time to prepare for because you're so familiar with the opponent.
Fair.
So there's a little bit of deference paid to the coaching staffs. Yep. Like, do you think, let me put it to you this way. If the bodies would cooperate, and they're not cooperating for Thursday, right? Thursday's barbaric in the sense of NFL football, is particularly late in the season. You want your Thursday night games early. So, and it's still too early for the Niners. Or still too late for the Niners. Do you think that Kyle Shanahan needs more than like 48 hours to put together a game plan against the Rams?
No.
When you're playing the Jags and you see them once every 4 years, like Kyle doesn't watch the NFL on a whole, right? Like he doesn't even scout it. You know, you think about the players they bring in. It's just guys that they looked at in the draft and then guys who have already been on their team. So, that's the one where you're like, damn, I got to watch a lot of tape here with the Rams.
Yeah,
you're
I get
always
that.
Keeping an eye on them. You have a bunch of guys in your facility that just keep an eye on them. Rivalries force you to always have them in the corner of your eye in the periphery. Fair. I got to ask you this, Jake.
Yep.
Would you bench Pooney right now? Would you give him the rest for this game, play Zekelge, who probably, let's be honest, would probably be the replacement? Would you play Zekelge over Pooney right now?
Maybe. Because you're going to lose anyway, I think.
Would you play Zekelj over Colby right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I actually would to give... Although you're going to play the Rams again, you kind of want Colby to get that experience and know, like, can he hold up against these guys? Like, he's going to want that experience. So I actually would want... I don't know. I don't think you change anything. In theory, I would play him, even though I would play Moss instead because I just don't like Zekelj.
I mean, there's that part of the conversation.
I don't know. Yeah. I think you're losing anyway. You might as well give it your best effort. If everyone's going to perish, let everyone go down together.
Blaze of glory.
That makes sense.
Blaze of glory.
I don't know. It's so... I just...
This team's 3-1. The vibes are immaculate.
Yeah. It's just... It's hard to look at the line and the injuries and all the other pieces and try and find a single way to be optimistic about the run game.
It's just brutal. It's just brutal. Would you play Drew Moss, Hennessy, or Austin Pleasance over anybody this week?
I would definitely not play Austin Pleasance. I don't know why you'd play Austin Pleasance. Yeah.
He might end up playing Austin Pleasance, but that was not your choice.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I was going to make one of those moves, it would be start Moss and let Pooney get a rest, because this sure as hell isn't going to help, but I don't know. I think you kind of keep it as is, as much that's bleak.
That's where we're at. They'll never, people keep saying this, bring back Feliciano, God. Never going to happen. There's a lot of other stuff that happens in a locker room that matters.
God.
Yeah. Just move on. Gonna leave it at that. John Feliciano is not a good enough player for them to press the Feliciano button right now. So
also, what's the benefit of bringing in like a veteran? It's yeah.
Well, he's a very vocal leader, Jake. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
So it has nothing to do with the politics of it. It has everything to do with other things. So defensive line. I mean, their offensive line sucked. Their defensive line sucked. Kind of hard to win football games when that's the state of affairs, no?
Yep. It's tough. I'm not even through the end of grading. I graded out the first half of the defensive line. But Bryce Huff still looked good.
Yeah.
Samo's trying. Mikel looked pretty meh. Was still effective in the run game. A little bit effective. It's just like... Without Bosa, you clearly see like, oh, this thing doesn't really work without him. And it would only kind of work if like Gross Matos was healthy. And then you had another guy who's
who knows what that guy is.
I know. But he does have like a couple really nice rush snaps a game. But
yes,
it's 2 years of him being hurt with this team after signing a 2-year deal that was not cheap. And you kind of need to count on him, and you can't. They're playing him a defensive tackle, and it's like, what do we think is happening in these run snaps?
Well,
like he needs to only play third downs.
It is interesting. So going back over it, this is something that I noticed against Seattle, and Liam Cohen did the same thing, which is when they got the personnel that they liked, and that meant Gifford on the field, that meant Jordan Elliott on the field, they'd hurry up. And that what's funny about that game, looking back on it, and it amongst all of the shit that happened, there were two drives that the Niners had them off the field, right? Upton Stout has the penalty.
Yep.
That's a long third down that turns into an automatic first. And then the Travis Hunter catch, not catch, sort of catch, who knows
right.
if he caught it. They hurried up on those. They had second down, and they did a hurry up to third down, which is very rare. And it worked right. a little bit for the Saints. It definitely worked for the Seahawks. And I'm wondering if this is now another thing, not to the extreme, but like when you are mixing and matching on your defensive front and you are throwing stuff against the wall, every now and again, the offense is going to be like, oh, we like this.
Right? Right.
And I do think that teams will have in their quiver this hurry up to keep personnel on the field and exploit it for a play that, you know, they might not have had success the first time they saw it, but they know it's going to be there on the next play. So it's just setting it up for the next one. And I saw that with the Jags. And those were, frankly, two of their best plays in the game. A PI call and that Travis Hunter touched it.
Listen, we're just at the point where you said it about a nauseating number of times about the Stars and Scrubs roster, and some of the Scrubs are playing, right? Like, we're getting – that's what happens. Have they been able to get a quality tight end behind George Kittle ever? Jordan Reed kind of counts. Not really. So they've never been able to do that, right? Defensive tackle. Jordan Jefferson had some nice plays.
I'd like to see more Jordan Jefferson. He was the only one who could hold the gap.
Certainly, I mean, against his former team, he should know them. Right. Should know some of those guys.
You should know, but yeah, like, I mean, he's felt them in practice.
I don't know. It's like, it's a tiring. I'm tired. Watching this team is tiring because it's a lot of
The Kyle deterioration this year might be worse than it was last year. And last year,
you're talking about him as a play caller.
No. The physical deterioration of Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah. The way
one of the great subplots of every season is watching Kyle slowly wither into nothing. They don't enjoy it.
Yeah, there's no in between with this team. They either get incredibly lucky or incredibly unlucky with injuries. And there's really, there's really no in between. And when they get lucky, they go to the Super Bowl
and then, lose. And their luck runs out.
Right, and then their bodies all collapse from going to the Super Bowl.
Right.
So
yeah. Michael did not have a good game.
I'm not through the second half, but it was
the first half
mediocre.
It's the same thing, but it doesn't hit the same. You know, it's like
they're thrown a lot his way. And they're like, all right, well, Bryce Huff's the only one that can beat us, and they would sometimes chip the hell out of him and throw. Yeah. But like, Bryce Huff's still cooking. Bryce Huff is still cooking, and I was kind of surprised, at least in the first half. He got home a few times, kind of more than I was expecting.
Yeah, he got in the backfield.
And then the Jags are like, all right, well, we're just going to get it out quick and, you know, make Daryl Luter beat us.
Which is their thing. But like, I just want to read off the names on this defensive line just to kind of reiterate where we're at. Huff, Elliott, Kalia Davis, Michael. Is that your best four up front right now?
I guess.
Okay. Backups of Gross Matos, maybe CJ West. I don't know, maybe thumb injury.
Collins, Robert Beal.
Collins and Aquanu is your second string with Beal and Jordan Jefferson behind it. Your practice squad has Travis Gibson and William Bradley King and Sebastian Valdez and Evan Anderson. This sucks. I'm sorry, this sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole house was held up by Nick Bosa. And when you have all of these bit players, this is effectively an NBA roster where it's like, okay, it's cool. It's the Cavs with LeBron.
Yeah.
And then LeBron's out and you're like, dear God, the Cavs
suck. It's a very strong comp. That's a very strong comp.
You got Booty Tristan Gibson Thompson giving you great
situation.
Reps. Yeah.
Who's Matthew Tristan Thompson?
Matthew Dellavedova giving you the business. I mean, there's not even a Kyrie.
Sam O might be Delly in that situation. I mean, just effort
we're
guy.
We're talking pre-Miami Cavs. You were but a child, Jake. Like, this is Booby Gibson. And,
I'm going to look up that roster, and we're going to spend the rest of the show actually doing comps to the 49ers defensive line. Just vamp for a little bit.
2008 Cavs roster? Is that what we're looking at here?
Yeah,
here we go.
Yeah. That's what we're doing for the rest of this, because I don't have more to add.
I'm just going to read off the leading minutes getters for the 2008 Cavs who lost in the Eastern Conference Finals in seven games to the Celtics. LeBron James, he's good. 30 points per game that year. Seven assists, eight rebounds. Pretty good. You will not believe the names that are about to come out of my mouth. Delonte West played 31 minutes per game. That was second on the team.
12 points a game, baby.
Drew Gooden. Zydrunas Ilgauskas. Booby Daniel Gibson. Larry Hughes. Anderson Varejao. And 33-year-old Ben Wallace.
All right, so
Sasha Pavlovich, Devin Brown, and Wally Zerbiak. Joe Smith got 21 minutes a game for that team.
Okay. So Mo Williams is clearly Bryce Huff.
we're doing this. You're not even looking at the same year.
We're doing it. I would say
Are you looking at the team that got swept by the Spurs?
I'm looking at the 2008-09 Cavs.
8-9 Cavs. Okay. Okay.
That's what you said, 2008.
I was thinking.
Finished first, 66-16.
66-16. That's right. They lost in the Eastern Conference Finals in six games to the Orlando.
Let's do these goddamn comps, Dieter. Come on.
Sorry. Okay. LeBron James, Mo Williams, Delonte West, Anderson Varejao, Zagrunas Ilgauskas, Booby Gibson, Ben Wallace, Wally Zerbiak, Joe Smith, Sasa Pavlovich. Go.
Yeah. So Mo Williams is Bryce Huff. He's like the number two, putting up good points.
He was an all-star that year.
Yeah, exactly. He's an all-star. I would say Mikal is maybe Anderson Varejao.
Yep, got defensive player of the year votes that year.
Right, like he's tough. He's tough in the paint, but he's not really doing a ton of explosive. Sometimes you're like, ooh, what do we got here? And then it sort of disappears.
Yeah.
Who's Delonte West in this situation?
Yeah, there's not a great.
Oh, I got it. I got it. No, that's Kalia Samo? Davis.
Oh, Kalia Davis.
Kalia Davis, because it's
boom bust. No. Kalia Davis is Booby Gibson in this situation, because Booby Gibson gave him the business in the Eastern Conference in the second round. Zydrunas Ilgauskas is Jordan Elliott.
Yep. He's
never been a better comp.
Yep.
Wally Zerbiak. Wally Zerbiak would give you a little something every now and again.
A little something feels like maybe. Wait, who's a... Joe Smith. I'll say Zerbiak is Alfred Collins. That doesn't really work.
No, it doesn't. It's Sam Aquanu. And then Delonte West is.
Oh, you 20. Know. Oh no. Oh, perfect comp. JJ Hickson. That's Alfred Collins.
There you go. 20 years old.
Come on.
Just out there doing stuff.
Yeah. What is he? Anything? Is he something?
There
I don't know.
Go.
Who's Ben Wallace though?
There is no Ben Wallace equivalent. Well, Yetur Gross-Matos is equally injured.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you get a couple sick plays.
And there's a lot of Robert Beal on this roster.
Who's Robert? Yeah. Who is Robert Beal?
JJ Hickson. Daryl Jackson, Terrence Kinsey, Trey Johnson. They could all be Robert.
There's someone named Jawad Williams. All right.
Okay.
If we covered our bases here.
No, not even close. Brock looked bad, felt bad.
Yeah, I gave him a negative one grade. Where it could have been positive if he did not get stripped. And that's the play that I watched. That's on him. Ball needs to come out. There are two options. Rip it. Every single thing. Listen, someone mentioned... people like to yell at us for whatever, and that's you're right. But someone was,
I'll fight him.
I know you will. That's why I try not to mention it, because you get too riled up. But sorry. Someone was like,
I'll end you. I'll fucking like, end your life.
Someone's like, you criticize Mac Jones, in games that they won and not Brock, which is not accurate.
What? We went in Mac, on Brock. He sucked.
So my criticism of Mac is like the ball comes out like a half tick late, and with Brock. The ball was coming out late. He was clipping his heels. And like that ball that Pearsall got hurt on, that play, what are you waiting for? He took an extra step and gathered for no reason whatsoever. I watched it like five times. There's no reason for him to wait to throw that ball. And then it was late. So Pearsall ends up diving on the sideline, lands. Not blaming Brock for the injury, but like the ball came out late and there was a bad result. And then on the play that he got stripped, ball needs to come out. So it's tough. It's tough. And like the strip sack, it's like, it's not even Lee mentions like, just fall down and live another day. No. Like he had had two options. He either needs to rip it to Bourne, who's coming open with no safety help over the top. I don't think Brock felt like he could step into it. And that's why he turned that down. And then there was somebody else, I think on the right side of the field. It's like, check it down there. Right. And he just, everything was slower than it had to be. And so when I guess, quote unquote, defended Brock, it's because I think people misunderstand him as a player. He elevated the 49ers offense because he could do things that Jimmy Garoppolo couldn't. He could throw outside the hashes. Mm-hmm. He could throw with far better anticipation, and he could scramble and play make off schedule in ways that Garoppolo couldn't.
100%.
But he is lacking elite arm talent. He's not even close. Like I would say his arm talent's below average. I think That's not really debatable. I think he has enough to be functional, but it depends on him anticipating and throwing with elite anticipation, which he has done for most of his career. And because he has sort of a fluttery ball and is shorter, he has to throw into tighter windows that close quicker, and he has to layer them into windows where you go, oof. And so there's a lot of that. Yeah. When he's not throwing with anticipation and trusting it, that's where you get stuff where the ball's coming out late and he just can't afford that extra half tick.
I mean, the comp that I made, he turned into, you could call it Mac Jones with his statuesque presence.
But Mac at least knows what he's about and is like ripping it short.
They also ran a more simple offense for Mac Jones.
Yeah.
Unquestionably. And in the first couple series, which is all Kyle Scripps stuff, you're seeing, and it's like, wow, you really busted out the big guns here for a bunch of guys who cannot handle that kind of caliber of machinery. They can't
Nevin
do
makes
it.
A fair point.
No, yeah, Nevin's going up twice now. it is, it is, it was kind of like unbelievable. In how aggressive Kyle was with some of these play calls on a team that has shown no capability whatsoever to run this stuff at any point this season. So much less with a hobbled quarterback, but you could say he turned into Mac. I think he turned into Trevor Lawrence, which is a guy who is always a beater too late, doesn't have his feet set, but still has the confidence.
So the thing is, I think Brock like was reading the game, not that poorly, but he was missing some like, he had two over the middle where there was like one to Willis that was like a sure touchdown. There's another one late.
Throw the ball. He didn't see him.
And he was looking that way too, and he broke open. And so he didn't really trust that. But then there's also plays where nothing's open, nothing's open, nothing's open. And he's buying time. The play to Bourne, the one catch Bourne had was fucking phenomenal from Brock. Because there's nothing there, nothing there. It's third and five. He buys time, gives eyes to Bourne. He even took a shot on one to McCaffrey, where he sort of bought time where McCaffrey's open and he's sort of like waiting to like draw the safety away from it to make sure. And he took a shot for it where there's stuff that I think he doesn't get credit for. And I think that's why it wasn't actually as bad as it was made out to be.
True.
But like, it's something where he can't afford. And listen, like if you go down and he doesn't take that sack and he either rips it to Bourne or gets a completion and they win this game, narrative's fundamentally different. Right.
Yeah.
And I think someone pointed out, you know, the one McCaffrey drop, that's not really an interception on him. He made a pretty good play. The ball was like a little over him, but that interception's not on him.
That's
the other one where it got tipped and you could say, I see what he's reading, but he stared it down and Devin Lloyd was dropping. I think that's a pick no matter what.
Agreed.
At minimum, Lloyd's getting his hands on that if it's not tipped. I think that's a pick 4 out of 5 times for him, regardless of whether the ball's tipped, because he's reading that. And he's got his eyes on Brock, and Brock didn't see him regardless of the tip pass.
Yeah. It's not one of those games where you now, and I think that everyone wants to do this, where I'll bring up the Netflix analogy again. Netflix used to have 5 stars. People couldn't handle it. Everything was a 1-star movie or a 5-star movie. So now they just do thumbs up, thumbs down. It's almost like they're doing studs and duds.
Yeah.
And there's a lot there where you go, okay, it's still Brock. And Brock's game is always going to be predicated, the excellence of his game is always going to be predicated on nuance and subtlety and kind of, you know, whimsical magic nature shit that you can't really bottle up and put into an EPA machine and you know, drive Stephen Ruiz crazy because it's not on the spreadsheet. How does it work? But when you don't have that stuff as it, at a transcendent level and you're making mistakes, he can't make as many mistakes as he did. Okay. The turnovers, you can't brush them aside. They're fundamental to the game of football. You had 4 in the game. 3 were attributed to the quarterback. Even if we say, okay, the McCaffrey one shouldn't have been one. You still have the strip sack. You still have the throw in the end zone. All of that. That's bad. That's bad. But when you're also not hitting the open guys on a play where it is obviously part of your progression, you have no feel, no pacing. Everything looks faster. He looked like a rookie.
I disagree that he had no feel. He was not trusting what he saw nearly as much. And it looked to me like there were times where he's like, I can't get it there today. Like I like it felt like he's like, I can't.
Maybe
I can't throw that ball.
Maybe he
today.
Was an empath or whatever. He felt too much. Big feelings.
Right.
Regardless. I mean, we're having the same argument with Trevor Lawrence as we are about Brock Purdy. He is Trevor Lawrence, or he was Trevor Lawrence in that game. And my fear is that for a quarterback who I firmly believe stole the spiritual soul of Russell Wilson at one point in a Freaky Friday-like accident, that perhaps, just perhaps, they might have done another swap on a weird weather day in Santa Clara, and now he's Trevor Lawrence, where every throw is a bit off.
Are you saying you believe that going forward?
No, I don't. Okay. I'm just being an asshole. Like,
yeah, it sounds.
My concern is that this is not because of the toe and because of receivers that he's never thrown to before and because of a shitty offensive line, that it could look a lot like this moving forward. And this is Trevor Lawrence, where we're just in this vortex zone of it's good enough, but is it good? Do you want to live this way?
Like, yeah, and last year he was just like fighting for his life every play.
But he was making plays. He didn't make any plays on Sunday.
He did. But like it was mostly the Bourne play, and there wasn't, and he scrambled for one, even though he still should have checked that down to the flat to McCaffrey, so he didn't take a shot. Anyway, Vice says just counted 24 players on the injured list for the team. I don't know if it's on IR. I think
not
it's
like
injuries.
Not this week. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to be good when you play third string guys versus starters. We just don't have much of a team left. Yeah, it's the stars and scrubs. You got backups. And again, I think tight end is such a key part of this where like Tonjes has made some great catches, but my God, it's like Ross Dwelly, where he's an athletic Ross Dwelly and he can do more for you, but he can't really block that well. And Farrell, I think, is a better pass blocker than maybe given credit for, but like he's not doing what you need in the run game and the turnover.
Like you're a tight end. What do I need you to be a pass blocker for? What a niche skill. Like how often are we going max protect in the NFL in 2025? Like there are some teams that do it. They have sick ass wide receivers and a quarterback who can rip it into the tightest windows known to man. That's not the 49ers. So great. You have a pass blocking tight end. Play him a tackle then. Cause they could use some of that. Our friend Tony, what does Mykel have to do to take the next step other than get healthy? What were they doing to him? Did his play regress? I wouldn't call it regression. It was the same stuff.
Yeah, I don't think he regressed. I think with Bosa out, I'm through the first half of grading. He got double teamed more with Bosa out. He did have a couple good snaps where he's going through the face of a guard in the pass game. But I quite literally like asked him this question. When I talked to him after the game, I was like, so as a pass rusher, like, what do you need to do? Like, is it adding moves? And it wasn't that interesting of an answer. It was sort of like my approach and like sort of like game planning for people and having a plan of attack, setting stuff up. I just think right now he's got power and he's like, no one can really handle my power, which is true.
But two guys can.
Exactly. So he's got power. And then occasionally, if he's going to the outside, which is rare, he doesn't get that many opportunities. He can bend and sort of try and rip through the outside, but he needs a power and he needs a counter. And he doesn't really have, as he called it, like a changeup. So
I don't even know if he has a counter yet.
I don't think he does. No, that's what I mean. It's like he's got power and he occasionally tries, but he doesn't try like a spin. He doesn't try like a chop or a swipe. It's just one arm sort of rip through is like, it's either power or like a rip. And that's kind of it. And
which we knew he's 20 years old. They played him at 4-eye technique at Georgia the entire time. Like, this is the thing. Like, you knew this coming in and you can use what he has. They use him a lot in what he can currently do, but now they frankly need him to be the finished product of whatever Mykel Williams is. And he's four games into his NFL career with minimal training camp. Like,
agreed.
Yeah. You know, Bill, this is why your rotational players have to be better. I think we kind of need to go back to where we were in July and August and really ask ourselves, what did you expect from these backups? Because the Niners didn't expect much. They were hopeful, right? We're all hopeful. Hey, you know, best case scenario, this can work. But you were really stretching disbelief on a lot of these guys to be like, oh man, if Daryl Luter goes out, everything will, you know, or if anyone goes out, like Daryl Luter will come in, or like Yetur Gross-Matos can, you know, give us a reasonable Nick Bosa.
This was the thing that we talked about, and it was this like unsexy topic that people got mad because they were like,
they didn't want to hear
people
it.
People were like looking at it in bad faith or completely misconstruing the point of how they approach this offseason. So they approach this offseason by shedding not just cap dollars but mm-hmm. cash. Jed did not want to. They did both, but especially there were a few signings like Leonard Floyd where it was about cash 100%. Dollars. They did not save money on the cap. Jed saved money in his pocket, which it's not my money.
He's entitled to do it, but they have
to do whatever he wants.
The clearly 49ers play with the salary cap, or they play with a cash cap of $300 million. And they knew that Brock was going to be a massive outlay to that.
They knew they were going to spend on Warner and Kittle and Brock, all of whom, like a lot of that money goes into escrow. The guaranteed dollars go into escrow. Jed's like, I'm spending on that. We're cutting cash elsewhere. And right. So what they didn't do is go sign like mid-tier guys. And there's like a compensatory formula to that too, where, you know, they sign a couple low level like comp guys. And then they go, well, we can't sign anymore because we're all filled
in. Fifth round draft pick. But
and
like,
I get that.
You're going to see one on Thursday with Puna Ford. Tell me that Puna Ford couldn't help.
My point was that they didn't sign just middle tier, like even $2 million a year free agents who have played NFL football to say
from scrimmage, because they did sign them for special teams.
They did. And how, look at how that's going every year. We go, oh, they're putting priority on special teams. Yeah.
They spent on a blocking tight end who can't block in the run game and a backup quarterback. The backup quarterback money has been well spent.
And DeMarcus Robinson, who was suspended for 3 games.
And they knew going into that.
They really, 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 really need on Thursday to be great. Vice again, thank you. Appreciate you. You know, stop blowing smoke up our ass, but I appreciate you.
No. Please keep doing it. We need it every now and again.
I appreciate it.
Let's just power through these, Jake. You're going to do it.
Sure.
Does the film show that Brock wasn't healthy?
I think looking before the game, I didn't think he looked comfortable running full speed. I was watching him warm up, and like, it's not to say he couldn't run, but like the strength coach was like, all right, run and then stop. And he was like taking a slower stop than I think he was being asked to take. A
couple extra steps there.
And I've seen him like run full speed. And even when he scrambled, like that was not a full speed Brock scramble. Right. They lied. Like point blank. They're like, yes, he's healthy. No, he's not.
He lied.
No, he's not. And then he just comes in. He's like, oh, it's sore. No shit. He's got turf toe, which can like be a tough lingering injury. And he played through it. And you probably wanted an extra week or so. But Mac couldn't go. Yeah. Right. Anyway, I don't think he looked healthy.
They have two injured quarterbacks and an Adrian Martinez. And they asked Brock, do you feel healthy enough to go? And I believe that Brock did feel healthy enough to go.
I agree.
You start playing NFL football and it's like, I do not feel healthy enough to go anymore. But
it's like, man,
it's too late. I got to fight through this thing. And so, you know, and listen, there's a couple of aspects to, I think, psychologically. I'm not going to pretend as if I know Brock Purdy on a deep level or anything, but like, you can't tell me that there isn't two aspects of things. One, Brock has a chip on his shoulder, right? He obviously has a chip on his shoulder from being under-recruited. Yeah, went to Iowa State even though Alabama offered. Like, no, I'm going to prove you wrong. Everything is Brock proving people wrong. That is an incredible asset. It's gotten him to this point. Even with the money, he still has that chip. And in fact, he probably has to artificially inflate that chip every now and again because it's easy to get complacent when you kind of have that kind of money, that everything's been proven. I won. Now he's got to...
Microchips?
Yeah, we got to make up those Michael Jordan adversaries. No, they don't think I can do it. They don't think I'm worth that.
Right.
Also, Mac Jones is out there winning 2 games. Brock's a competitor.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it lit a fire under his ass and I'll fucking show you guys. And you guys
also,
don't
you know how Kyle is. Kyle explicitly, remember when he drafted CJ Beathard because he was a tough quarterback? Yeah. He has explicitly valued toughness as a trait in quarterbacks more than most coaches. Part of that's because his quarterbacks are on these like 7-step drops where it's like, all right, this is going to be a sick play. My QB might die.
Yeah. Okay, mashed eggs. Love you, mashed eggs. Could have sworn the Jags responded to 21 personnel by going too high in nickel and a couple times, and they still couldn't run the ball. Doesn't get worse than that. Nailed it. This would have been the game where you break it out.
Yep.
And they still couldn't do it because they couldn't get to the second level. We're not even talking about the third. They couldn't even get to the second level.
That's I will say there's plenty of Dennis Gardeck, too, and there's plenty of base. But
Dennis Gardeck, good football player.
That one tackle where he just helmeted Sky Moore and everyone went, didn't see that.
No, that's fine. It's Sky Moore. Yeah. He doesn't get that. I just don't understand how the coaches can watch Brendel's tape.
Brendel's tape mostly is, yeah, that's fine. That's actually exactly what the takeaway is most of the time. They go, It's fine.
And then you add in the coaching aspect of it to where he's the one handling all the protections on both pass and run. You don't want to put that on anybody else. He snaps a good ball these days.
Do we go with a mediocre center who's good in space, who knows the plays and can really take a load off our QB and snap the ball reliably? Or do we go with the mystery box? They go with, all right, well, he's mostly in pass protection, going to be helping. It's fine, which I get that they're very particular about it. Is that the right call? I don't know. I think they should have drafted Creed Humphrey years ago, and I think they should be putting more of a priority on their offensive line, not necessarily just drafting guys in the first, but anyway, moving on.
They value brains over brawn at that position. They went to a Super Bowl with Ben Garland, a former defensive tackle, as their as their center. Foot, Dieter and Hutch. What round do you think the 49ers take a QB in this year's draft, especially if Purdy ends up? Yeah, I think that they really like Curtis Rourke.
I do too. I think it's like in fantasy where you stash a guy on IR and you're in week 7 he's coming back.
Yeah. Don't worry, my season will be over by then. But yeah. Let's stick with Foot. Outside of Kittle and Warner, who on this team can we honestly say we know what they are? I mean, in terms of being a starter moving forward long term. Pearsall. Pooney.
Pooney was my next one. McKibbitz. I would say McKibbitz. Yep.
Mikel. Very good about Mikel. It's a very high floor.
Yeah.
You want the ceiling, but you have a very high floor.
I would say
D Winters.
Close. And him and Siegel are in almost similar buckets to me of I feel pretty good about them moving forward, but there is
we'll have to wait and see on that one.
And it's not in terms of just what they are and knowing exactly what they are. I'm not sure. But Winters, I would say is almost there. Yeah.
I don't think you can make that argument with Lenore because they literally just switched his position I'm already advocating switching him back. Do you have that feeling with Renardo Green? Probably not yet.
Not yet. I think it's not a totally different. It is kind of a new scheme. It is. There's a lot of new responsibility.
Every week a new scheme with this fucking team.
C-Dub is Kittle off IR this week. He's not coming against the Rams. I think the plan was always with the short week, they knew, all right, it's going to be at least 4. We're not, or it's going to be 3 and he's not going to play against the Rams. He's going to try to, and it's going to be worse. So let's try and get him back for the Bucs. I think the Bucs is the plan.
And it sounds, I haven't checked in lately, but it sounds like they're on track for that. They played it safe there.
A little back to back, starting with Benally. They sold another share of the team again, valued $8 billion or something. Is there something we don't know about the York's financials? Followed up with V blank. Right. NFL has a strict limit on number of minority stakeholders. Seems like the Yorks are probably looking to sell the remaining large stake eventually. They're liking that $8 billion valuation. They will keep their majority stakeholder status. I don't think they have any reason. I think this is they are not the most deep in the pocket owners.
Well, it's a very simple NFL question. Yeah, where does their money come from? The 49ers. That's it.
Right.
And there are some teams where, where does Jerry Jones's money come from? It comes from the Cowboys, but it really also comes from a lot of things that are Cowboys sort of tertiary that make a tremendous amount of money.
Yes. That's why he loves the glitz and glam. He's got media entities.
Legends. If you don't know about Legends, they run concessions at a bunch of stadiums. And that's Jerry Jones's company. They run it. I think the Yankees and Jerry Jones got together to create Legends, which handles this particularly luxury box staffing at stadiums and such. So That's a lot of money every year. That's a straight cash flow. That's not what the Niners have. The Niners have equity. New York's have equity. I forget what their business was in Youngstown, but I don't know. I do know. They built shopping malls. How's that going? How's shopping mall building going these
days? Go to malls are alive and well in Japan and other countries. Not here.
I don't think the Youngstown, Ohio company's building. So they're selling this because Jed has a lot of aspirations. They don't seem to have much to do with the 49ers these days. It mostly has to do with buying European soccer teams.
Which, God damn it. I envy him there. We're going to get one.
We're trying. Keep throwing us $10. We'll get there. We're going to buy Forest Mechanics. I might have to buy Forest Mechanics. There has been a conversation. Let's leave it at that. and so it's a whole thing. It's an absolute money pit.
Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, I refuse to call him Rob Mac. They're going down.
We're taking you. We're taking you.
We're going to do our own doc.
It's
going to be shot on a Super 8 camera.
Yeah. My crappy iPhone 13 mini will shoot.
It's going to be a silent film.
Okay. I don't read too much into it other than they just figured out that owning Rangers and Leeds at the same time is expensive. And this is free money. Easy cash flow. Yeah. It's
free money with no downside. Really?
It's effectively a loan. It's a zero interest loan. Because you don't have that equity now moving forward, but if you think it's growing at a higher rate than the equity you're selling, it is just cash instead of asset growth. So they're just taking money out of the market and putting it into different markets. They're diversifying the portfolio, if you will.
Last couple, we'll get to Mashdags. For what it's worth, Mikel's on pace for more pressures than Chase Young had his rookie year, which is interesting. That honestly wouldn't shock me. Again, like I think Mikel's
all
playing well.
All of them came with Bosa.
Yeah, I mean, I did have him in the first half with one. So
he can collapse a pocket. He can hold an edge.
He can.
Good. It's good stuff.
He can.
This is good stuff, Jake.
Yeah, I think that's it. Let's get out of here. I gotta keep grinding tape, and
I gotta get down to Niners.
We got to preview the Rams tomorrow. So
yes, I'll put up a video. I talked to the great Cam DeSilva, the Rams Wire. We did a 30-minute breakdown of what's going on with the Rams. Jake and I will have the film breakdown of what's going on with the Rams. Cam's not of that ilk, but it's just nice to talk to an old friend called Dieter's Football Friends. You can Dieter's check that out later friends. Today.
And Demetrius Flanagan Fowles, Dieter's Football Friends. I see what you did there. And go subscribe to the Hutch Report, where I will have takeaways from the tape later today. And tomorrow I will have the greats. And believe me, folks, they're ugly. By the way, PFF said the 49ers offensive line is fifth in, I think, in run blocking and sixth in pass protection. So don't pay them. Pay me, because I'm doing it specific to the 49ers. And it's based on scheme and it's based on what I'm watching.
Holy fucking shit. PFF, you're doing great, baby.
Bye. Really good work. All right, folks.